The views expressed in this interview are those of the individuals and do not reflect the official policy or position of the U.S. government, the Department of Defense, the U.S. Navy, or the Naval Postgraduate School. Welcome to the Trident Room, brewer of stout conversation, unfiltered and on tap.
In today's episode, things get nautical as host Lieutenant Commander Colleen Wilmington meets on board the Western Flyer with the members of the Western Flyer Foundation, Education Director Dr. Rebecca Mostow, and Science Manager Katie Thomas, in order to discuss the Western Flyer's return to Monterey and milestones achieved in her first year of service as a research vessel.
Welcome back to the Trident Room Podcast. I'm your host today, Lieutenant Commander Colleen Wilmington. And I am on board the Western Flyer in Moss Landing, California, with the Education Director of the Western Flyer Foundation, Rebecca Mostow, and Katie Thomas, the Science Manager. For those who are unaware, the Western Flyer was commissioned in 1937, specifically for sardine fishing in Monterey Bay, and John Steinbeck and Dr. Ed Ricketts sailed on her to the Sea of Cortez in 1940. If that rings a bell from your high school English class, because the book Sea of Cortez was written by John Steinbeck about that particular adventure. Afterwards, the Western Flyer returned to fishing duties and actually spent the last 75 years away from Monterey. In that time, she sank twice, but she was fully retrofitted in 2023. So she has now been back in service in Monterey for a full year. That anniversary was the 4th of November. And as someone who, my undergraduate is in English, but my master's curriculum is in meteorology and oceanography, the Western Flyer and her story is of particular interest to me. The impact report was published on the Western Flyer's website on the 4th, and she's accomplished a lot in the last year. I saw 950 student interactions, festival and events, peer events, and underway events. How do you coordinate those? What all do you guys plan to do?
Yeah, it's been an extremely busy year, and that impact report is actually like fiscal year 23-24, so it only takes you up to July of this past year. And we had an extremely busy summer and a really, really busy fall of starting our at-sea research and education program. So yeah, you're right. It's been a really busy year and we're a really small team. So Katie and I are involved in the planning and execution of all of those different weird things you mentioned.
When was the foundation established?
Is it 2018?
So the boat, the founder of the foundation purchased this boat in 2015, mm-hmm. I believe, with the intent to restore it for research and education and this long-term vision of the Western Flyer Foundation. I'm not sure exactly when the foundation was established mm-hmm. to serve that goal. It's been a transition time because for many years, like 7 to 8 years, the role of the foundation was just to restore this boat. Oh. And the people working with the foundation were the board members of the foundation and then all of the shipwrights and woodworkers and people that were working on the boat to restore it and make it suitable for modern day work. And Rebecca and I came in at this transitory period where the foundation actually hired an executive director, and then they hired Rebecca to manage the education programs, and then they hired me and a captain to work with the research and the marine operations. So yeah, we're a small team. That's our whole team, full-time, 4 people. We have a lot of part-time staff as well.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, I've gone underway twice and it's been a different captain each time. How do you pick captains to sail an 85-year-old ship?
We have this amazing captain, Captain Paul Tate, who is like the center heart of our organization. You can look back at our Facebook and see when we announced that we were hiring Paul, and just we got this flood of messages of people saying, oh, I sailed under Paul Tate back in 1973 and he's the best captain I've ever worked with and he changed my life. We just got scores of messages just like that, and we still get them. Every once in a while people write to us to tell us the exact same thing about how wonderful Paul is. So we're extremely lucky to have Captain Paul Tate at the helm. He has been out for a couple months recovering from surgery, and so we're really lucky that we've had some really lovely reserve captains step in. So our reserve captain right now is Brian Ackerman, who just has this wealth of experience running research vessels. right here in Monterey Bay. So we're really, really glad that he's been able to step in and help us out while Paul gets recovered and gets ready for the next adventures.
And I saw on the website that the Western Flyer is classified now as a research vessel. Mm-hmm. What sort of things did it take to reclassify her from a fishing vessel to a research vessel? And is that a criteria for the captains that they have to be research vessel qualified?
I don't think that there's a special qualification for being the captain of a research vessel. There are a lot of differences between a ship that can take out paid passengers and a ship that's dedicated to fishing or to research. So the classification that we have means that this vessel is dedicated to research. All of our trips have to be research-centered, and our education programs have to be engaging with research also. We can't take people out on the boat who are not part of that mission. And so that's the framework that we're operating under. This vessel is really dedicated to research and education.
Okay. Yeah. What were some of the most interesting research trips over the last year?
We started our research and research and education programs this summer. So we've had a pretty short window where we've been delivering on this goal for the foundation. But yeah, we've had some really, really wonderful trips blending marine science research and education. That's sort of the mission of the foundation and of the education program, is that the students, the college students who come out with us on our cruises, they're actually collecting the data for Western Flyer Foundation long-term monitoring programs, and they get a chance to do this hands-on work where they're collecting the data and then see the data when they go back to their classroom. So last week we had a group come out from Monterey Peninsula College oceanography class. Their professor is Fred Hochstader. He's this amazing professor who's been teaching non-majors oceanography at Monterey Peninsula College for a long time. And so we get to have these non-STEM majors come out on the flyer, learn to do these fun pieces of data collection. They're so excited to talk about plankton for the first time and see plankton under a scope and see whales for the first time. So we've had a lot of really fun trips. Honestly, we've been doing a lot of trips this fall, and I'm like, can I pick just one? They're all blending together in my brain. I'm so tired.
We've had a lot of fun whale encounters.
Oh yeah.
Whales seem to really like this boat. They'll come right up to it, dance all around it. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, one of our very first trips of this education research integrated trips, we had a group from Cabrillo College, and they were really, it was a field methods of oceanography class. They were really stoked on getting their data collected because they're doing these projects in class. The students were like, okay, I really need that CTV cast. We got out, we were only 40 minutes out of the harbor, and we got to our first station and started stationing. And as soon as we got to the station, these three humpback whales just came right over to the boat. We were sitting still and the whales approached us, and they just totally trapped us. Like, we couldn't do anything. We couldn't deploy our instruments. We just had to sit there. We had to sit there and watch whales. Oh no. It was an incredible experience. The whales came up on one side of the boat, and then they went under the boat, and we could see them on the echo sounder, and they came over to the other side, and they were blowing right at the surface and rolling around right at the surface. And it was an incredible day. And we kept being like, oh no, we're not getting the data we planned, but we're having the greatest day on the water possible.
So you guys actually have a fair amount of equipment organic to the flyer. How do you balance your equipment versus what
other people want to bring on
and which one gets to do the recording to have that data history?
We have a set of core tools that are part of the boat and part of our programs, and everything that we sort of have two different research realms. We have our integrated at-sea research and education programs, where we're trying to start long-term monitoring at different sites around the bay, and we're getting students to be hands-on collecting that data. And for that, we're using all Western Flyer tools that the foundation owns, that we maintain. But then we also offer research charters on the Western Flyer. So when you came out with us with the Naval Postgraduate School, that was a charter trip to deploy moorings and to take some CTD casts. And for example, for the CTD cast that we did on that trip, we used an NPS CTD that had a turbidity sensor that was useful for the data collected. So when we're going out on our own, we're usually employing our core tools, but when we're chartering the boat for a client, then we'll deploy whatever tools they need to collect their data and accomplish their research goals. And we do also have scientists along sometimes on our integrative research and education trips to demonstrate new tools or talk to students about their area of expertise. So a couple examples are, a couple weeks ago on a CSUMB invertebrate zoology class trip, we had along someone from Ambari who works with the Synchro program that's doing a lot of marine technology assessment. His name is Jason Adelars, and he brought a really cool plankton imaging system. It's like a plankton net, but the caught end has a little tube attached to it that pumps plankton from the net in the water up onto the boat through an imaging box on the deck. And you get these live images of all the plankton coming out, and then there's some AI that like segments out all the plankton particles and tries to identify the species as they're coming in.
Oh, wow.
So that was pretty cool and fun for students and non-students like me to see in action.
Yeah.
And we also had another fun plankton adventure was we had Manu Prakash from Stanford come out with us one day, and his lab developed this tool called the Planktoscope, which is a low-cost plankton imaging flow-through system where you can take a sample of plankton that you've collected and pump it through a microscope, and it does kind of a similar thing. It will take periodic images, and then there's software that can help segment out all the particles and try to identify things. And it was really funny because he came out with a Cabrillo class that is a plankton monitoring network class that are trained in plankton identification and monitoring, and he was like a celebrity to these people. Thanks. It was incredible. We introduced him and they were like, oh my god, I get to meet Manu Prakash in person. This is so cool. Can you sign my plankton guy? You know, it was so fun. Yeah. So those types of connections are really special.
That's really neat. In the impact report, it mentioned that one of the events over the next year is to recreate the Sea of Cortez trip. What aspects of that trip are you hoping to replicate versus, due to updates in technology and whatnot, are you going to try to do it a little bit differently or collect some other data?
I would say that this trip, the return to the Gulf of California, is absolutely inspired by the log from the Sea of Cortez and the flyer's connection to literary history and to the history of marine science in the Gulf. But it's inspired by, and we're trying to follow in the footsteps of Steinbeck and Ricketts and also iterate upon that and do science and education that really serves the communities that we're going to be visiting.
Yeah, and I'd also add, like, when Steinbeck and Ricketts went on this expedition to the Gulf of California, they used the Western Flyer as their home and their mode of transportation to get to all of these intertidal sites where they explored diversity and collected lots of specimens. And now the boat itself is a platform for research and education. So it's designed to bring people aboard, engage them with marine technology and modern tools and oceanography, meteorology. And so that's also core to what we'll be doing in the Gulf of California. We are going to visit some of the original intertidal sites that Steinbeck and Ricketts visited, but we're also coordinating with our collaborators in Mexico to design at-sea data collection, which Steinbeck and Ricketts did not do, using all of the modern tools that we have on the boat now to collect data that's impactful to local researchers and communities working in the Gulf of California.
Will the fish tank that's in the hole be used? I've heard about the fish tank. Haven't seen the fish tank. Is it for doing experiments or is it like a holding tank?
So there's not a fish tank. So the whole bottom of the boat, the entire bottom of the boat used to be dedicated to storing sardines. And it was called the fish hold. This is when this boat was a sardine purse seiner, they would trap these massive schools of sardines and nets, bring them up, and then dump them into the belly of the boat.
Okay.
And that was the fish hold. So that whole space was just filled floor to ceiling with fish. And then the boat would bumble back to shore, like almost sunk under the weight of all these sardines. It's funny to see pictures of these seiners going out and they're like floating on the surface and coming back and they look like they're about to go under because there's just tons and tons of fish packed into their holds. So that's what that space was historically. Now that space below deck has been converted into a research lab, a dry lab for research and education. Okay. So there's science tools down there, there's storage space, there's desk space, there's a big central table and monitors. We can set up microscopes down there. We have a flow-through seawater system installed that pumps seawater continually into the boat past a bunch of sensors, kind of like the CTD, but it's for surface water only, and then pumps it back off the boat. And we can definitely go down there and take a look after this, but that's what's down there. We don't have anything to support keeping animals alive on the boat, but we do have a really beautiful lab space down there.
Yeah. What is the foundation hoping to really get from the trip?
There are so many goals of this trip. I think the number one goal of this trip, this very first return to the Gulf, is about community building around the flyer and sort of a reintroduction of the Western flyer to this community and this ecosystem, and saying, here's this cool platform that we've built out, and what do people really want to use it for? What's the best use of the flyer now? So yeah, we've got our research mission about the trip, we have education mission about the trip, we have community engagement missions about the trip, but I would say the like overarching theme is a celebratory return and a reintroduction.
With the intent that one of the foundation's goals is that this won't be a one-off trip to go back to the Gulf of California. This is something the foundation wants to do every couple of years.
Yeah.
And continue to build off the work that happens on this trip to keep engaging in long-term research projects and education programs that improve and grow over time.
That's amazing. Especially as an oceanographer, when we go underway on our warships, there's a balance of, hey, can we do some data collection while we're doing our normal operational mission and sending that back? And then we see how much data we get from personal vessels, research vessels, and without them, our data would have a huge capability gap.
Yeah.
So huge thanks to you guys for everything that you do. Very interesting, and I think it's inspiring to have this boat in the bay. I've seen a lot of Western Flyer advertisements from the community, not from the foundation. Look at what the flyer is doing.
That's great.
She's home. You can go tour her. Getting the opportunity to come on board 3 times now is really cool, and especially sitting in the galley
to do the
podcast is really interesting.
That's so great for us to hear. Right now, one of the main grants that's funding these ATSI education and research programs is actually from the Office of Naval Research. And so our research and education programs, a big part is about inspiring students and connecting students to maritime careers, including naval careers. And so it's great to hear that it's like making it over to NPS and people are hearing about it and getting excited about the flyer and the work that we're doing.
Well, and the fact that you're not just targeting college students or postgraduate students, there are elementary students who come on board.
Yeah, for docked programs.
Yes.
Yeah. So we go, I'm like, don't freak out, parents. Yeah. Yeah. We go out into the bay with college students, and then we have docked programs that we've been sort of trialing what is the best age group to run the docked programs with. My sense is that our docked programs are most impactful for high school students who have had a chance to read a little Steinbeck, you know, and the connection to Steinbeck's and to local history is like a little more impactful for them. And they can connect in a different way with the research instruments. And then we have in-classroom programs that my feeling now, after we've trialed them more, is that the in-classroom programs are most impactful for our elementary, late elementary, middle school students, where we can do more of that art-science integration inspired by Steinbeck and Ricketts and spend less time thinking about the particular history of a particular vessel that might not resonate with them quite yet in their careers.
As someone from Kansas, who's like, love being out
love it.
On the boats. The closest thing I had was a pontoon boat on the lake. Not a lot of research going on there. But having the opportunity just to see the marine life, and you see the other sailboats coming in and out.
Exactly.
And, like you said, being a part of the community is really awesome. Those are all of my questions. Do you guys have anything that you wanted to add?
The one thing I would add about our education programs and these like ATSI research education trips is one of the big messages that we try to talk to the students about and make sure that they walk away with is this idea that in Sea of Cortez, Ricketts and Steinbeck write about this idea that they had a research mission for their trip, but they didn't let that research mission sort of put blinders on them and make them miss all of the other things that they were curious about. They say, we were curious, and that curiosity was not limited, but was wide and horizonless. And we try to really bring that sort of mission and inspiration into these at-sea cruises, where we say, we have the research that we as the Western Flyer Foundation we want to do, we have the cruise plan with the sort of learning objectives that I have for the class, but, you know, when we get interrupted by whales, we let that happen and we don't fight it. Or when we have a student who is particularly excited about looking at the chart and thinking about the bathymetry of the ocean, we let that curve the sort of teaching mission of the day. So I think that's a really important part of the sort of heart of the foundation, is this flexibility and an open curiosity and a desire to follow the curiosity of the students who happen to be in front of us.
For any parents listening, I just want to iterate, safety is always paramount.
Oh, yeah.
During the data collections, been very full safety briefs conducted, all personnel on board are safety observers.
Yeah.
Very smooth operations.
Yeah, well, you know, my number one learning objective for these cruises, we have our research goals that are about collecting data, but the number one learning objective is that students have a positive experience at sea. And so to have a positive experience at sea, you have to stay safe the whole time. You have to have a safe experience. And so, yeah, our safety briefings are really about a collaborative conversation where the students actually come up with what are the safety protocols for the boat, and then we learn how to follow them all together.
Okay, so we are going on a tour of the Western Flyer, and we are down in the engine room. We've gone through the work in progress lab. What are we looking at here in the engine room, Katie?
Yeah, so we're in the engine room. It's a tight space. There's a lot packed into a small area in here. But when the boat was restored, the founder decided that it was a priority to have a modern hybrid diesel-electric engine so this boat could be really green and fuel efficient. So you can see in the engine room, we have a big white John Deere diesel engine, but then we also have these black cylinders that are the transfluid electric component of our propulsion system. So the captain can actually switch the boat between diesel and electric modes. And it's really eerie when you're out at sea the first time that the captain switches everything into electric mode because all of the vibrations and all of the sound just stops. And it feels like you're dead in the water. It feels like, oh no, the throbbing heartbeat of the boat that is keeping me alive out in the middle of the water has suddenly disappeared and we're just floating dead in the water. But no, actually you're in electric mode. And it's really amazing and really promising for things like wildlife observation. Mm-hmm. We mentioned whales really like this boat. Seabirds, things that can be disturbed by loud noises. The electric drive has a really promising potential for studying those types of things.
And the Flyer has bow thrusters.
Yes.
Right? Those are controlled by the electric engine, or...
That's a good question. I don't actually know the answer to that question. Yeah, we'd have to ask the captain about that. So the captain can choose whether to be in electric or diesel mode, and actually the back, the aft of the boat is filled with a bunch of batteries, electric batteries that are recharged, that we recharge from the diesel engine, and then can run the boat in electric mode.
So as long as you have enough food on board, you're self-sufficient.
We do need to refuel eventually. Yeah.
And get diesel,
yeah. Yeah, and get diesel. But yeah, it's a really neat and really cutting edge technology. There's not a lot of boats that have this type of system on it yet.
When Steinbeck and Ricketts took the Flyer down to the Gulf of California, diesel engine?
Diesel engine. Okay. Yeah, fully diesel engine.
Different diesel engine.
Different diesel engine, yes. Everything in this room is new.
Okay.
Yeah, and we didn't talk a lot about the restoration, but the hull and a lot of the bottom of the boat were very rotten, so a lot of that has been replaced, but with the same type of construction as the original vessel. The deck house that we were in before, that's 80 to 90% original. So little bits of things have been replaced where they were irreplaceable, but most of it is just restored. Mm-hmm. So when we were sitting having our conversation in the galley, we were sitting in the galley that Steinbeck and Ricketts sat in when they were going to the Gulf of California.
And there's 6 racks on board, so you can take a 6-person crew.
We actually have 11 bunks now.
Oh, okay.
On board. I can take you forward. We can look up here.
Traveling through the engine room.
Yeah, it's a tight squeeze. Gotta watch where you're stepping. So this is the forepeak of the boat. And this is not the same as it would have been in 1937, 1940. We've actually added a full bathroom with a shower and a sink and a toilet, which is great because the only facilities previously were upstairs. There's a head and there's a sink in the galley. It does a little bit, yeah. So we have 4 berths here in the forepeak now. And then upstairs we can pop upstairs and actually just keep touring. What? So up in the house on the deck, we have 2 berths along the hallway, and then there's a little area that has 4 more berths. These will be where we're sleeping on that trip. Mm-hmm. It'll be pretty packed, so we'll all get to know each other very well. And then there's a captain's quarters. This is actually where Carol Steinbeck, Steinbeck's wife, who went on the trip but is never mentioned in the log from the Sea of Cortez, and they did get divorced shortly after their return. She slept here because she was the only woman on board, but this is the captain's quarters. So there's this like beautiful restored helm, and then tucked away behind it is a little captain's quarters with a desk and a bunk. And a door. The only berth with a door.
Little is accurate. I think these are smaller than our Navy racks.
Yeah, it's a small space.
That's really neat, though.
And do you normally only use this bridge during foul weather? So I've noticed that during most of the operations, the captains have been up top.
Yeah, so the captain can pilot the boat from the bridge here inside or from up top. One of the things about this bridge... Oh, sea otter. Sorry, I'm getting distracted. Adorable marine mammal alert. It has these portholes, right? These four portholes and then two doors on either side with windows. But the visibility isn't amazing from this location. So generally when we're leaving the dock, just getting out to sea or coming back, the captain will drive the boat from the flying bridge up top. All of the controls are also duplicated up there for the most part. Okay. So they can fully fly from there, really good visibility. And then when we're out at sea, especially in inclement weather, the captain will come down and pilot from down here. Okay. Both areas are options, but generally leaving, you do want that really good visibility.
Right. This is awesome.
Yeah. And everywhere you look on this boat, you see evidence of like historically accurate restoration mixed with modern technology. So like we're standing in the wheelhouse and we have beautiful original wood everywhere, and we have brass fittings on things making it look very old, but then we have a modern day chart plotter,
right?
And we have all of the modern day navigation gear. Yeah.
And then you turn around and have a 1944 clinometer.
Exactly. Yes. So the whole boat is kind of this combination of the old with the new, and the respecting of the history of the vessel merged with the mission to move forward as a research platform. So it's a really unique, I can't say I've ever been on a boat like this one before.
Right. Very, very cool. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We'll see you on another Try to Earn podcast.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us in the Trident Room. For more information about today's guests and topics, please visit the show notes online at nps.edu/Trident Room Podcast. The Trident Room Podcast has been brought to you by the Naval Postgraduate School Alumni Association and Foundation. For questions, comments, and suggestions, please email us at Trident Room Podcast Host @nps.edu.